Good evening. I hope you have all had a fantastic day. Have you had a fantastic day? Have you had a good day? There's a couple of you that believe it. It is certainly good to be able to be here. I say it all the time, it's a blessing to be able to come and worship our Heavenly Father and to worship Him, here's the thing, as He has commanded us to do. Isn't it a fantastic blessing that not only can we know that there is a God, but that He, being the creator of all things, from whom all, every good and perfect blessing comes, as the book of James tells us, He communicates with us in such a way that He tells us how we can please Him, how we can serve Him, and He does it most often in explicit and wonderful detail. We don't serve a God that we have to wonder if He's mad at us or not. We don't have to do that. We don't have to serve a God and say, well, I hope that's good enough. Hope I'm doing what He wants me to do. It is fantastic that we don't have that burden, that we have God telling us how He would have us to worship Him. And that is a fantastic thing when so much of the world, even people who are religious and who are striving to do what they think is right, have no real idea what they're doing. I'm thankful. In the book of Philippians, chapter 1, you see the Apostle Paul speaking about how he is thankful for the fellowship that he has with the Philippian brethren there. You know, they were supporters of him during his missionary journeys. And in verse 7, that Paul said that they were in his heart as he was confirming and defending the gospel. Now, we know the confirmation of the gospel, the idea of reconfirming the souls, teaching the truth, performing miracles that Paul could do in the first century, having confirmation. Yes, the words I'm speaking, Paul would say, are exactly what the God of heaven wants you to know. And he confirmed that by his miracles. Something else he said, though, that he was in a defense of the gospel. Now, the word defense there is the word apologia, where we get the word apologetics today. And apologetics is a word that, as we know English, is how we use it most commonly, doesn't sound like what it is. If you tell someone that a good thing to study in a school of preaching is the apologetics class for the gospel, for the Bible, for God, you know, people may say, I don't want to apologize for God. What do you mean? I'm not going to apologize. But the word, at its root, has the idea of giving a defense. Defending the fact that God is, defending the fact that the Bible is, looking to all the proofs that there is a God and that we should serve Him. That is vitally important. And one of the things that Paul did, he was set for a defense of truth. You know, this is the second Sunday of the month, and one thing that we're going to try and get back on a schedule of doing is on the second Sunday having a sermon, possibly two, but at least one, on a defense of the gospel, something that can build our faith and help us have this defense that, yes, what I believe is true. The Bible teaches it. Logic teaches it. And I'm not ashamed of it. Because unless you can have a defense of the gospel in your own mind, you cannot be like Paul. Because Paul said, I am unashamed of the gospel of Christ. For it's the power of God to salvation, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Now, unless you can give a defense of the gospel, you can't do that. You can't. How could you be unashamed of something you're not really certain of? How can you do it? You can't. You can be very bold to put on a strong face and say, I'm set for a defense, but you're not. I'm not ashamed, but you don't know. And it's one of the things that is very helpful to do, and we're going to, as we go through these lessons this next year, or this year, I guess, you know, we're already in May. And one of the things we're going to do is look not only at what the Bible says about defending itself, and we're going to do that some tonight. What does the Bible say about defending itself and giving proof that there is a God? And looking at all these things that cause us to say and agree with the Bible writer, with Solomon long ago, who says, it's a fool that says in his heart there is no God. The evidence say? What's it tell us? Well, let's look at a few things. I want us to look, if we could, first at Psalm 19 and verse 11. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament, or the sky, shows his handiwork. What's that saying? That's saying you can open your eyes and look up at the night sky, or just the sky, and you can see the grandeur and the power of God. But see, we look at the sky so often, we don't really think of it that way. We don't think of, well, it's just the sky, what's so special about it? We go out at night and see, at least if you don't have too many bright lights where you are, you can look up and see thousands upon thousands upon thousands of stars in the night sky. You can see the moon. You know, and sometimes we're in a situation where, depending on what season it is and where we are facing the sky, sometimes some of those twinkly lights out there are actually planets that we can see with the naked eye from time to time. You don't know they're planets unless you have a telescope, I guess, or know a lot about astronomy, but we see all these things. We know that you can find your way around the earth on a boat by looking at the night sky, right? You can tell where you are based on when it is, knowing the stars, and knowing the charts, and you can figure out how to get home from just having the sky, which can be a tremendous map to you if you know how to look at it. So this looking at the night sky, looking at the sky, shows God's handiwork. And if it shows God's handiwork, it shows there is a God, doesn't it? Absolutely it does. You know, seeing a space shuttle or seeing pictures of it is a very common occurrence that I guess most of us have seen many, many times. I understand we're trying to get more and more away from the space shuttle and go to other ways of going up to the stars. And I don't know how that's going to work out. But I know that my grandfather was born in 1904. He would say 1904. He lived over 90 years old. You know, my grandfather lived in a time before cars were around. As a little boy, you had a horse and buggy, that's what you had. Then there were cars. Then, of all things, people found it not uncommon to fly in planes from place to place. You could have planes taking you around the globe, jet planes, when he was just used to horse and buggy. And then, he lived long enough to see the space shuttle. And I remember not too many years before he died, we were talking one day, and he said, you know, he goes, I've had the most amazing life. I've seen technology and the world around us explode to where I went from horse and buggy to the space shuttle. And that was right. You know, that 90 years he lived, 90 plus years, was a tremendous change in how people live. In just that one lifespan, I tell you what, you look back at human history to where we have it recorded, and I don't know that you can have any time period advanced so much in 100 years as we've had the last 100, 150 years here in our time. It's very amazing, very exciting, and maybe a little bit scary. But when we think about the technology we have, we understand that we know more about the world around us and about the stars and about the heavens than any people ever has on the face of this earth. And yet all of that should not cause us to say, we are intelligent, we are smart, therefore we know there is no God, you silly Christians. When we look at all that's around us, all that we can see, all that we can understand, we should have even more confidence in the gospel of Jesus Christ. We should be set for defense even more because of the information that we have. We're going to take a look at a couple of these things tonight in our lesson. We have some pictures that we have from our solar system I think are so amazing. We have, of course, the planet Jupiter, and these pictures were taken. How many of you remember when the Shoemaker-Levy comet hit Jupiter? Or is that just me? Any astronomy geeks in here remember that a few years ago? Anybody? Brother. Well, this was interesting because what you have is you have this comet, and you know, we're always worried about, or we're always talking, or science is always talking about, what happens if a big old comet or asteroid hits the Earth, and that'll be it, you know? And so here was something where we saw a comet in the solar system. And it was actually several comets kind of all together on the same trajectory, like a little train of comets. And everybody was like, wow, look at this. And it was going to hit Jupiter. And so we got to see what happens, because Jupiter is a big gas planet. And what happens when a comet hits it? Is it going to blow apart? We know it's so big, surely it won't be that big a deal. But, you know, because we live in a time where we can do this, there is picture, there is high-def video of how all these things work, and to see how God made everything and how everything just works. And, you know, you can predict. If you know where a comet was at any point in time, you know how fast it's going and where it's going, you can predict when you're going to see it again. How many have seen Halley's Comet? I don't even know what's Halley's Comet. Halley's Comet is a comet that comes around every, 76 years? Is that right? So, you know, you'll probably get to see it. Last time it was here, I don't even know when the last time it was, but I tell you, there's so many things that work on clockwork. How can you see a comet go by in the sky and take pictures of it and know exactly when you're going to see it? Because God makes things so precisely and so regularly. It's amazing how God does these things. Again, what's the firmament do? It shows God's handiwork. Almost like you could set a watch by it, you see. And then we send these little mechanical devices, these rovers, to places like Mars, and we look around and see how amazing it is. And you know what we found out? You know the biggest thing we found out? There aren't any people on Mars. No Martians, everybody. Don't get too excited, but it's true. At least if they're there, they're very good at hiding themselves, you know. But for a long time, there were people who would look up at the moon and think, there are people up there. Jules Verne, great science fiction writer, wrote some books about people being on the moon or people being on Mars, and people believed that for a long time because we didn't have the ability to see very well, very far, and well, you know, why not? Of course, people reading their Bible saying, I don't see any Martians in here. I don't know what you're talking about. I see that God made the worlds and all in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1 and 2. But there's nothing here about little or big or varying colored people. There's nothing like that. But now we can actually send probes to planets and look at them and know more about them. And the more we see about our solar system, the more we should understand how awesome God is and how he made us. We have here a picture of the 9 planets. This is not to scale. I say 9. Poor Pluto. He got demoted, right? He's been discriminated against, and now Pluto's longer a planet. That makes me sad. I grew up in a time, young people, when Pluto was a planet, right? How many of you? Now it's like Pluto. Isn't that a cartoon dog? What do you mean Pluto? I don't understand what Pluto is. But we can look and figure how apart things are and how they spin and how they move. It's amazing. Again, the heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament shows his handiwork. And I want us to look at Earth for a second when we're talking about how amazing the heavens are, because we're part of that, you see. I know from our perspective, we don't see Earth in the sky when we look, but we're part of those heavens. And we have to understand that we are on a spaceship. Not one of our making, but one of God's making. And I want to share with you a couple things about where God put us and how he put us on it and what that means. If we're talking about Earth, we understand the Earth is rotating on its axis at 1,000 miles per hour. That's how fast that we're going. We understand that we're rotating around the sun at about 70,000 miles an hour. 19 miles per second. We understand that the sun and the solar system are moving through space at 600,000 miles per hour. So ladies, if you have a bad hair day, you understand why, because you're going so fast through the universe. But look, this is what's happened to us. Anybody feel it? You got motion sickness? Anybody know? You know why? Because God knows what he's doing. But we're moving this fast through space. We think about the Earth. If the Earth rotated much faster, and not much at all, at least in the books that I've read, If the Earth rotated much faster and there was much more speed in the atmosphere and energy and how we're moving, you would have cyclones throw over the Earth like a kitchen food mixer. That's kind of a very vivid picture, but it's true. You know what? We're going at just the right speed. If the Earth turned much more slowly, the days and nights would be impossibly hot or cold. Now we see this in the planet Venus, which rotates very slowly compared to us. Not as slow as some other planets, but it rotates so slowly, again, the days are impossibly hot and the nights are impossibly cold. Life couldn't exist there even if someone went there. Every 243 days, temperatures reach 500 degrees Celsius, water boils at 100 degrees, and its place in the solar system is not much different than ours. It's a little bit closer, but the problems are that it rotates so slowly. You might say, well, what's that have to do with anything? You know what? We're in the right spot, the right distance from the sun. We're spinning just fast enough so that life is possible and we can have a great life with the planet that we have. The Earth's orbital speed, orbit and tilt are just right. And so you have to ask, is this just some kind of cosmic accident? Is it? We're just in the right place at the right time. I don't know how, but that's how it happened. Talk about the sun for a second. You know, the sun, these are just some color filters on the sun that show different aspects of its light. But I thought those were very interesting pictures, and I wanted to show them to you very briefly. But we're talking about the sun. It's, you know, it's a giant nuclear bomb. It's a giant nuclear engine. We don't think of it like that, but it is. It's not going to blow up like a bomb does, like a nuclear bomb would. But it's an engine which is converting nuclear matter all the time. That's how it gives off all the heat and all the energy. It is amazing to think about what our sun is. It gives off more energy in a single second than mankind has ever produced. How much? It converts 8 million tons of matter into energy every second and has an interior temperature of about 20 million Celsius. So bring your sunblock if you're going to visit the sun, right? You might want to bring an air conditioning unit of some kind if you're going to go there. But again, that's what powers us in a physical way. It gives us the energy we have to grow and have seasons and have enough energy from the sun so we're warm enough that we can live, all of these things. We think about the violent reactions on the surface of the sun, yet we're just far enough away where we're safe. We have in the center of our Earth an iron core. And you know what? It's spinning very fast. Faster than we are. And that iron core spinning at the center of our planet, you know what it does? It creates a magnetic shield for us. You know what the magnetic shield does? That magnetic shield protects us from almost an infinite number of bad and terrible radiation that would kill us if it could reach us from space. It even protects us from a lot of the sun's radiation. But we get just enough so we can live. But all that's just an accident, right? You know, the idea of an iron core and the planet spinning super fast to provide protection for us, that's just, I don't know, that's just crazy to think that there's a God who would do that. Again, the sun's radiation can be deadly to living things. But the Earth is at the exact correct distance to receive the proper amount of heat and radiation to sustain life. If the Earth were much closer, human life could not survive. It would be too hot. 10% closer would be far too close. You'd have far too much heat to be absorbed. 10% further, too little heat would be absorbed in either scenario. Just a little bit closer. Just a little bit further. And we would not be sitting here tonight. It would be impossible for life to exist. Behold, the handiwork of God. What about our moon? Our moon, again, it does amazing things for us. And this was something at one time people thought, well, are there people on the moon, you know? This whole idea of the man on the moon, you know, the face that if you're looking at it and kind of holding your head just right, you can kind of halfway see a face on the moon sometimes. People thought there were actual people there. They didn't think the moon would, well, I guess some people thought it was made out of cheese, I guess. I don't know. But the Earth is the perfect distance from the moon to control ocean tides, 240,000 miles. Now, understand this. Without the moon being just where it is, just the size it is, you also couldn't have life on Earth. Well, how is that? How does that work? Well, because it affects the tides. What about the tides? This movement cleanses shorelines and is an important part of ocean currents. You know, we don't feel the gravity difference when where we are in relation to the moon. But the moon pulls on the Earth just a little bit. Just enough so as the Earth is spinning and the moon's going around it, it pulls with just enough gravity, it pulls the water just enough to where it creates tides. High tide, low tide. And that keeps the shorelines clean. It also, moving all that water around, that creates ocean currents. You see, you know about the ocean currents. You know, people who travel on boats know about ocean currents. There are kind of like super highways and ocean currents that if you get in that particular ocean current, you can get to where you're going much faster. And there, you have that around the world. People who sail, or at least captains of big ships understand that. Captains of big ships understand that. That's because of the ocean tides. And here's the other thing. Without the gravity on the oceans, from gravity from the moon, you know, you wouldn't have as much oxygenated water. You know what that would mean? It means sea life would die. Let me ask you a question. What happens if sea life dies? Are we far behind? If the water in the sea couldn't hold life, it was stagnant, and it was deadly, and it was terrible, how long before we don't have any life either on land? Why do we have such vibrant seas? Because the moon pulls on the ocean just enough to keep tides. Now, here again, where is the moon? How far is it exactly? How does that affect us? Without these currents, oceans would stagnate, killing all sea life. If the moon were just 1/5 closer to the Earth, tide, understand, if the moon were just that much closer, the gravitational pull on the oceans would be so great, we couldn't survive. Because water would cover land, not just a few feet on the shores, but it would cover Earth's entire surface twice a day. We couldn't survive. If the moon were just a little bit closer, you're starting to see a pattern here? Starting to see it? Perfect place, just right, sun's just big enough, we're just far away, the moon around us is providing life for us, and at least it keeps us where it is from having a lack of life. The size of the moon is just right. And now, just for a few minutes, let's look at our galaxy. Now, this is the stars we see in the sky. This is what you can look up the night sky if you're on a ship and you know where the stars are and you have no electronics like that's going to happen today. But you could navigate by the stars. This is, we're talking about our galaxy here. The Milky Way contains over 100 billion stars and is so large that traveling at the speed of light would require 100,000 years to cross. You think it's pretty big? Certainly it is. That is 588 quadrillion miles just across the diameter of a single galaxy. And there are lots and lots and lots of galaxies that we know of and more that we don't know of. Billion light years in diameter. What's a light year? A light year is the distance that light travels in the vacuum in 1 year at a speed of slightly more than 186,000 miles per second. It's fast. There are an estimated 1 billion galaxies in the universe with 25 sextillion stars. Are you getting an idea of the enormity of this? Let me ask you a question. If God made all this, and he did, do we have a powerful, majestic God? Because very quickly you see God created more than just the earth. We go back to the creation account and we see that He made all of it. He made all the lights in the sky. He made all of these things for us. He created it. He spoke it into existence. All of that. Size and scope. And what do? I heard someone say once that just recently that God made man in His image. And then man has returned the favor. What's that mean? It means that man is trying to recreate God in man's image. And he tries to say, well, listen, what's God? Well, to me, God is blah, blah, blah. Yes, somebody else, what is God? Well, to me, God is something else all entirely. That's what it is. When it comes to worship, I don't think my God would mind that. Oh, yeah, this is what God wants us to do. No, this is what God wants us to do. No, God surely wouldn't judge us. God has commanded certain things, but surely He wouldn't hold us to that because my God wouldn't do that. When you see what God has done, who are we to remake God in our own image? We're to be in marvel and awe. And listen, there are men walking around who wear the title of reverend. But my Bible says that God is the one who's reverend, not man. Who deserves your awe? Who deserves your respect? The one who spoke words and all of this happened when He said the words. That's who. That's who deserves our respect. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. Now, I want us to go a step further in the book of Hebrews. The book of Hebrews, chapter 3 and verse 4, says, every house is builded by someone, but He that built all things is God. So, being as you can see all these things, and through modern technology, we can know just lenses powerful enough, and we put the Hubble telescope up in the sky, and it takes these pictures outside the atmosphere, which are super clear, take awesome pictures, and we can see and know more than we ever have. And so if you see a house, what do you know? Well, without being extremely intelligent, you can know if you see a house, someone built it. And so if you look at the majesty in our place in the universe, our place in the galaxy, our place in the solar system, how we are in just the perfect spot for there to be life, let alone how life got here. God made it. But we can see where God put us in the perfect place at the perfect time to thrive and to live and to grow. When we see that, what's our response? Is our response to say, well, God might exist, and I guess I'll go to church or something. I don't know. I'll kind of be a Christian because after all, I want to cover my bases. That's not faith. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him because we must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. You know, there was this guy named Pascal lived a long time ago, and he said, he was kind of agnostic. He said, well, you know, I'm not sure if there's a God. Is there a God? Maybe. Is there no God? Well, maybe. I don't know. So, in order to cover my bases, to cover my bets, I'm going to live as if I think there might be a God. And so if there is one, when I die, I'll go to heaven. And if there's not a God, I haven't really lost anything. And that has been seen as an amazing religious argument. Like, hey, if you're not totally sure, you might as well be a Christian because you never know. The problem is, Pascal's wager is not genuine biblical faith. It's not knowing that God is. It's not being set for a defense of the gospel. It's not being unashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's saying, we must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Does that sound like, I'll just flip a coin and I'll see what, heads, tails, I don't know. This idea of being set for defense means understanding that there is a God. We can, 1 John chapter 2 says, we can know that we know Him. What's that mean? Does that sound like it's a possibility or a chance? Or does that mean we can be certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that we didn't just happen? There's no way mathematically it can take place that we as a complex living being can just kind of somehow happen to exist. And where'd we all come from? Hebrews 3:3 says, he that built the house hath more honor than the house. So if I look at the vastness of the universe around me, and I see that someone had the power and majesty to make it, what's that tell me about the maker? We already talked about that. It gives me the understanding that he should be reverend in my eyes. He should be one that I respect, that I adore, that I should be thrilled beyond measure. He's given me his word, his mind, through his word to be able to communicate to me who he is, who we are, and how we can live together for all of eternity. And when he gives us opportunities and commands us to worship him, and tells us we should worship him both in spirit and in truth, John 4:24, we should all come to services and be happy we're here. And be impressed that God has communicated this to us. So much that, yes, I understand, Apostle Paul, Romans 12, 1 and 2. I understand it's my reasonable service to give my life as a living sacrifice to the one who did all of this. And by the way, he then gave his son to die on a cross for my sins because I sinned and I violated his will and there is justice and there was a cost, and he gave of himself to make it right. Glory be to God. Again, we talked about the Hubble Space Telescope. These are just some pictures it's taken. And you know, you've heard it said, have you ever heard the saying, only God can make a sunset? Have you heard that? That's just talking about, look at the beauty in nature. Look at the beauty in nature. Look at the things that we can see, pictures we can take of the complexity of our surroundings and see the majesty of it and know that God just did that. And we have to ask, is this just blind chance? Is all of this something that just kind of happened somehow? Is it? Or do we understand what God tells us in Genesis chapter 1, Genesis 1 and verse 14? We talked about all of this being, it's a guide, it's a map. Genesis chapter 1, and this is one of the most impressive verses in all the Bible. Impressive verses in all the Bible to me. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven and to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs, for seasons, for days, and for years. I can't give the invitation without making the obvious analogy. We have watches that we wear. Maybe you have a smart watch. Maybe you have an old-fashioned dumb watch with gears in it. I don't know. Smart watches are electronic, and they can talk to us, and they can tell us when we get email and messages, and sometimes you can even talk to them. You know, we live in a time, how many of you remember the old Dick Tracy comic strip series? And when he would talk to us, he would be able to communicate by talking to his watch, and people are like, ah, that's crazy, right? Talk to your watch and it acts like a phone, that's just nuts. What do we have? We have that now. That's pretty amazing to me. And the transistors are so small and they put them together in such a way in here that it's a very intelligent computer. In fact, in your phone, probably in this watch, you have more computing power than was contained in the space shuttle. Think about that for a second. You have more computing power than was in the entire space shuttle. Now, I know the space shuttle was an amazing vehicle, and the design was awesome, and how did it work, and it got people to space and got them back home safely. They could glide on in, and they could do all kinds of amazing experiments in the space shuttle. Oh, that's amazing. It's great. But as far as the computers go, they were very simple. We have all of that in everyday watches or phones that we use to call and talk to somebody. But what God does is make for us a giant watch, a giant calendar, which is everything we've just talked about tonight. Why do you do it? I wanted you to have a watch. I wanted you to have a calendar, which also serves as a map, if you will. He wanted you to have that. And so when God makes a watch, he makes a watch, doesn't he? We look up at the night sky, or even the sun or the moon, and we should understand how blessed we are and how majestic and how awesome our God is. And let me tell you, friends, doesn't a watch demand a watchmaker? If every house has a builder, if you see the universe around you and you understand it's a giant watch, doesn't that watch demand one who made it? When you see the precision, when you see how everything works together just perfectly, doesn't that demand intelligence? Doesn't that demand power? Doesn't that demand God? It certainly does. Listen. Purposeful, intelligent design demands God. I tell you what, maybe it's just me. I hope it's not. But whenever I study things like this, it truly deepens my faith. It gives me more confidence of what I believe and why. And these are things that God has told us to consider. It's God who tells us about the firmament and the glory of God. It's God who tells us, a Bible argument, that every house is built by someone. And so when we look around us, we understand that it should cause us to glorify God, the nature that around us and how complicated it is, and we look at the night sky, we should be in awe of the power of God. Understand, this all had to come from someplace. Let's not remake God in our image. Let's stand in awe of what the image of God actually is. His power and his might. You may be here tonight, and you're not a child of God, you're not a Christian. Why would you not want to be a Christian? I understand that there are things as a Christian you're going to suffer. If you're a child of God, you're going to suffer persecution to some degree. We're promised that by the Apostle Paul, and he knows what he's talking about. He lived it. But he wrote in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 12 that every person that lives godly, lives a godly life in Christ, is going to suffer some persecution. But what awaits after this life? This life is a few days and full of trouble, we're told. What's next? Eternity. Where are you going to spend it? We're going to spend it where we've decided to spend it. We're going to spend it where we've prepared to spend it. And we're going to spend it in a place, if you're serving God, that's been prepared for you by Jesus Christ. Remember, Jesus left this earth. Before he left this earth, he told his disciples what? What did he tell them? He said, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I do that, I'm going to come and receive you again. He's going to come back. He's going to take those who are following him home. Are we ready? And oh, we believe in the God of heaven. Do we live like we do? Do we live in awe of him every single day? And if you're here tonight, and you're a Christian, but you've not been living faithfully, why not? You're serving this God who loved you that much to put you in physical creation where he did and then provide the sacrifice on Calvary for your sins. Why not? If you have a need tonight to be baptized into Christ or be restored to faithful and active service, do not wait. Please come while we stand and while we sing this invitation hymn. This world is not my home.